I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. The Nobel Peace Prize will be awarded to a Chinese dissident in Oslo tomorrow. China is furious about it. We'll tell you why and what the Chinese government is doing about it in just a few minutes. But first to India, where a credit crisis is threatening to ruin a multi-billion-dollar financial industry. Microfinance is big business on the subcontinent. More than 29 million loans have gone to low-income people in India, mostly women. And the industry is now worth about $4 billion. But now that industry is facing possible collapse after politicians in one of the country's largest states, Andhra Pradesh, encouraged borrowers to stop repaying their loans. More than 5 million have heeded the call to do that, and there are fears that borrowers in other states will follow suit. We wanted to know why, so we called upon David Rudman. He's a senior fellow at the Center for Global Development. He's been following this issue closely. Also with us is Vijay Mahajan. He is the president of the Microfinance Institutions Network, which represents 80% of the microfinance sector in India. In 2009, by the way, he was listed by Bloomberg Businessweek as one of India's 50 most powerful people. So thank you both so much for joining us.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Mr. Rudman, let's start with you. As of the middle of this year, as we understand it, the microfinance industry just in the state of Andhra Pradesh had about $1 billion in outstanding loans to over 6 million people. So what is happening now? Why aren't people paying the loans back?
Well, I think the core of what's going on here is kind of like the mortgage crisis in the United States. Microcredit is about giving really small loans, maybe $500, $200, to quite poor people. And it just this industry exploded in India over the last 5 or 6 years. I think in 2003, there were 1 million loans. Today, there, as you said, more like 29 million in the whole state. And it seems like the thing just grew out of control and that a lot of people could get credit too easily. And we know how that story goes.
So people could get credit too easily. What happened? A lot of people, the default rate started to go up. And then what happened?
Well, there was a political intervention. The government came in and shut the industry down in mid-October, just about 2 months ago. And they did that because there were more and more reports that microcredit was being linked to suicides. People were getting so trapped by debt they were killing themselves. How true those reports are is a whole other question. But that became a kind of political dynamic that drove the government to intervene in a very draconian way, really. I think they overreacted.
And David Rudman and Mr. Mahajan, I'm going to ask you this question as well. As in this country, we think of the microfinance industry as being driven by nonprofits for purposes of the social good, okay? But it's my understanding that in India, most of them are for-profit. I just wondered why that is.
The idea is if you want to serve 100 million or 300 million Indians with microcredit, you need money. You need capital to hire people, set up your business, buy the computers, everything else. You need investment. And the only way you can get enough money is if you pay for that capital. And that means promising a share of the profits. So Vijay Mahajan about, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago was a leader in this thinking that the microfinance industry needed to go from being nonprofit to for-profit in order to attract the capital and serve more people.
Okay. Vijay Mahajan, will you tell us more about that?
Yes, exactly what David was saying, that, you know, I indeed began my life in a nonprofit and used to do microfinance as a nonprofit for nearly 10 years and barely managed to reach about 20,000 people and with very small loan portfolio. And when I thought about it, how can I access, bank credit? There's no way we can grow and reach the millions who needed the credit.
What percentage of the loans right now are not being, you know, repaid? And how concerned are you that the whole industry really will collapse?
Well, you know, the repayment rates, which traditionally used to be 98%, are now below 10% in Andhra Pradesh. Some of us who were already collecting on a monthly basis and also work with the male farmers and so on have higher rates. So the average is about 20%. But still, a vast majority of the weekly repayment institutions are below 10%. And with this, they cannot sustain for more than another month or two because, everybody has costs and everybody has bank loans to repay. So far, no microfinance institution has defaulted to banks. But another month or two, even that would be a remote possibility.
And I was asking David Rudman, I'd like to ask you this question also. Why is it that people aren't repaying in this country? He was likening it to the mortgage industry collapse here. And in this country, it's in part because of the recession that a lot of people are losing their jobs and they just don't have the money to repay these loans. Why is this happening in Andhra Pradesh? Why is it happening there? Is it this political move here or are there other factors?
There is some parallel in the sense that people in the first place have borrowed. Many people have borrowed more than what their capacity to repay was in terms of their income generation activities. Most people in India, 93% of people who work in India are in the informal sector. They're either self-employed or they're wage laborers. So as it is, incomes are not very high and they're not always steady. And so if you are over-borrowed, then, you know, you can get into a situation where you're not able to repay. But that is something that they're accustomed to. But when local political leaders encourage them not to repay, you know, they tend to feel legitimized in their stand, and then it becomes a contagion and spreads.
David Rudman, one issue here is I'd like to ask you about the whole question of regulation here. You know, this is one of the criticisms that's arisen in the United States, is that people say, well, people were able to get these loans who shouldn't have gotten them, who really did not have the capacity to pay them back. Is that the same in India? And are people saying there should have been some regulatory oversight here? And why wasn't there?
It's a good question. In other words, what's the lesson here going forward? How do we prevent this from happening again? And it's a tough question. One big difference between India and the United States is that in India there were no credit bureaus to track what everybody was borrowing, and so which would have then helped prevent overborrowing. Now, I should say that didn't stop the crisis here, so they're not foolproof, but it would have been a good first step. The industry has been trying to move in that direction, but India doesn't have a unique ID system like we have social security numbers, so it's even hard to identify, you know, match up loans. So that would be one key step, is to try to build a system like that. But I think there also needs to be some kind of international institutions that brings together all the socially motivated investors who are investing in microfinance and actually trying to help, not hurt things, and get them to think collectively about whether they're putting in too much money sometimes and to slow down their investments.
David Rudman, is it in part the case that the government institutions also compete with these private sector institutions too? Is that true?
Absolutely. And that's why I think the government overreacted in trying to deal with what was a real problem, so that its response became a real problem.
What's the worst-case scenario here?
The worst-case scenario? The worst-case scenario is that microcredit in India is pretty much bankrupted because the state that we're talking about, Andhra Pradesh, is the biggest state for microcredit. And if it completely falls apart, that could destroy the finances of these microcreditors. That in turn means that poor people will have fewer options when they need to borrow in an appropriate way. It could also send ripple effects around the world and really damage the entire microfinance industry and have the same effects in other countries.
Well, we've mentioned that the Nobel Peace Prize is to be awarded tomorrow, that one of the sort of founding fathers of microfinance, Muhammad Yunus, was awarded a Nobel Peace Prize some years ago for his innovations in this area. So I think, you know, your concern is that other countries will not, you know, pursue this road. Vijay Mahajan, I was asking David Rudman, what's the worst case scenario here?
Well, the worst case scenario is pretty horrible because, you know, India now has a very large microfinance sector, bigger than Bangladesh. Most of it is financed by large banks. It's not through savings. And therefore, if banks get a knock in one state, they're simply going to declare this whole asset class as unreliable, unworthy of lending to. So it's going to be a huge setback.
Vijay Mahajan is the president of the Microfinance Institutions Network. He joined us from Hyderabad, which is the capital of Andhra Pradesh. David Rudman is a senior fellow at the Center for Global Development. He joined us here in Washington, D.C. This is an ongoing story, and I hope you'll keep us apprised of its developments. Thank you both so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.